Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening, whenever you're listening to this. This is Carl from Deviant Legion, and this is we're going to be doing our IST special series, Incredibly Strange Television, and this is Doctor Who Part 4, Monsters and Aliens Part 2. And with us today, of course, always, my partner in crime, Miss Rachel. Say hello, Miss Rachel.
Hello, Miss Rachel.
There she is. I expect that from now on in. And also with us, the wonderful, the fantastic, the incredible mistress of sci-fi, Miss Vicky Love. Say hello, Vicky.
Hello, Vicky. No, I can't say it like Rachel, so I'll never try that again. She's the best.
You're so fun.
Hi, everyone. I hope you like the Doctor Who villain, because we're back with him.
I mean,
absolutely.
I frankly am kind of terrified of some of the Doctor Who villains. And I was reminded of that today. I just want you to know, because I was doing some research Carl had me doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later. These guys are
horrifying. Oh, my God. Whenever they say, oh, Doctor Who's for children, I guess they mean Doctor Who is for children's nightmares. Because even the old classic villains are scary. The things they do are just scary. And so, yeah, come on. And so, anyway, we started this, what, a couple weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
And what?
Yeah, two weeks ago, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you're listening to it in the archives, it's just, you know, an hour ago or so. But anyway, this is part two because there are so many villains. And not just that there are so many villains, but there's so many great villains. It's hard to say, oh, those guys weren't scary. They're not worth talking about. We talked about the Daleks last time and some of the others that are pretty scary to us. We mentioned our the ones we were scared the most of, and went on about them. And then after the show, we realized that we never really talked about the Cybermen. And along with the Daleks, the Cybermen are number two. Who are the villains in Doctor Who? Well, it's the Daleks and the Cybermen. And so we thought we better come back and at least give them their due because, seriously, they have done some pretty scary stuff and really need to chat about that. And so, before I go on about this, you guys have anything you want to say?
I am agreeing 100% because, you know, we talked last time about the Daleks and how one of the things that was so incredibly scary about them is how they are so single-minded. There is no reasoning with them because there is only one thing in their brain, and that is to exterminate. Okay, that's it.
Right.
They are these, like, inhuman machines. And that's something that really scares us a lot. And when you think about it with the Cybermen and the fact that they are machines that use occasional human parts to function, but they're still completely unyielding and unrelenting in their one track of, I'm going to murder your ass, it's scary.
Mm-hmm. It is. They're just as scary as the Daleks, but I think that through my research, I've found that they're scarier. And I think that through what they have done and how they've been used through the whole series from classic on, I think they're scarier than Daleks. You have anything to say, Carl, before I get into that?
Absolutely. All I have to do is ask this question. Would you rather be killed by a Dalek, or would you rather be changed into a Cyberman? Which one would you rather do?
Oh, yeah. Murder my ass.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. That's right. Because there are plenty of examples of the humans who have been taken over by Cybermen and what they actually think.
And all I have to say is, if you think, you know, dying from a, you know, being exterminated by a Dalek is bad enough, which it is, look at poor Bill. What happens to Bill?
Yeah, but Bill's not
that
the only one.
Absolutely just. Oh, that tore me the fuck up. And you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking Capaldi's companion.
Companion.
Yes.
Well, and even though I have not really seen those earlier seasons and episodes, I mean, I've, you know, here and there I've been kind of 5 minutes of an episode here and there to, you know, catch up on things. But even though I haven't seen those episodes, I know about those things happening, because that is one thing that the new seasons are really, really great about, and that is the continuity with the earlier seasons. I just have to throw that out there, by the way. I know we're talking about monsters, but damn, these showrunners are good.
Yeah.
We'll be doing that later.
Yeah, I know. So there we go. A little little foreshadowing for you. No, I'm with you. The Cybermen, I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm surprised that my kid did not turn out like as a nightmare demon baby, because I was watching all of this Doctor Who when I was pregnant with insane insomnia. And so I would just binge these whole storylines, and it was nightmare fuel, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is nightmare stuff. Well, here's the thing. The Cybermen are the villains that forced the very first Doctor into his regeneration. And so if that's not history, I don't know what is. And so
I said, that's fucking canon right there. Like,
we all know
the Cybermen are like the first super awful, like, the Cybermen are the first guys who really fucked the Doctor over and forced him to regenerate.
Right, exactly. It wasn't the Daleks. The Daleks invaded Gallifrey in their purity of race exterminate and everything. And so the Doctor did some pretty terrible stuff when it comes to that. But in the canon of the story, Doctor Who's first regeneration happens because he's trying to save the Earth from the Cybermen. And everything that he does takes a physical toll on him, and he has to regenerate from William Hartnell into Patrick Troughton. And that's pretty crazy right there. Cybermen are they take over our bodies. They love our brains. And but they also have in a way defeated the Doctor. Although the Doctor rises like a phoenix, so he's not really defeated. But that's an interesting thing that no one ever really talks about.
Well, and when you look at it, who is the Doctor more afraid of? I have actually seen the Doctor talk fucking to a Dalek and actually end up somehow being able to find that little grain of reason in it.
Right.
That never happened with the Cybermen.
Never.
So,
never.
Like, from that point on, like, it made them that much scarier, because at first it was like Daleks and Cybermen are kind of, you know, hand in hand here. They're usually, like, where one's fucking stuff up, the other one's, like, right nearby. So
right.
I've noticed that
right.
a lot.
Right.
And now that you know, like, at least one time in the history of all the times the Doctor was able to talk a Dalek down, suddenly the Cybermen seem that much more fucking invincible.
Well, Patrick Troughton as the second Doctor, every time the Cybermen popped up several times during his run, the second Doctor was always afraid of them. And when he found out that that's who he was up against, he was always trying to get his people away from them. Always. We need to leave. We can't fight them. We need to leave. That's his number one strategy was get the fuck out of here. And
yeah.
So, and so it makes sense when you realize that he didn't know that he was going to regenerate thanks to the TARDIS. The Cybermen actually took every bit of life out of him to defeat them the first time. So
yeah.
Puts them in a different category.
Knowing what the Doctor knows, in that his regenerations are supposed to be limited, it's like,
right.
If I come up against these guys again, this takes yet another one of my very, very precious regenerations.
Right.
I only get so many. So, yeah, like, I agree with you there, Vicky. Like, that is a solid point. Cybermen are probably the scariest villains.
Yeah.
But, like, who does the scariest shit? That's the question.
Right.
What is the villain that does the scariest stuff? Like, who has the most evil, intense plot? Like, that's what I'm interested in hearing about.
Yeah, and it looks like, the Cybermen, there's an image of the Cybermen that I have of when the whole parallel universe is happening and Mickey is fighting the Cybermen with his new buddy. And it's nighttime. And the way that they lit this and did it, the Cybermen are coming. It's night and the light is on them and their silver is just, it's not sparkling, it's not glaring, it's just intense. And they're doing that march thing that Cybermen do, and there's just platoons and platoons and platoons of them just coming more and more and more. And they have that kind of Nazi-like determination. They're just freaking scary.
Yeah, they are.
True, and I think that's part of it, is it's not just how, what they do to people. It's how much that imagery harkens back to things in our relatively recent history. I mean,
yes,
I say relatively recent, but I'm talking things like, World War II and things, Nazis, like you're saying. And they do. They're a very obvious, it's no fucking coincidence that that's exactly what they look and sound like.
Yeah.
And that's another reason that they're so scary. It's that, like, subconscious, visceral, like, I was not involved in any of that. And it still scares me. I've seen the pictures. I've read the stories. And I don't even know the half of it. And, yeah, no, scares the fuck out of me. And I am done. Thank you. Like, nine. None for me. No, thank you.
Well, here's another thing about Cybermen versus Daleks, as far as, they're the Doctor's two most scary villains. People talk about them the most and everything. Daleks are after to kill the Doctor, and they have a grudge against the Doctor because of, in fact, how they were created. And so the Doctor and Davros and all of that, the very first scary villain were the Daleks. So there's that. His Cybermen, here's the thing about the Cybermen over and over in the stories. They come after the companions. It is always the companions who suffer the mistakes of either the people fighting the Cybermen or the Doctor himself, okay, underestimating or not getting it right what the Cybermen are going to do. And one of the very first victims is Adric. And Adric was a boy, kind of a boy. He was a teenager, and he wasn't quite an adult when it happened to him, but they were fighting the Daleks, and this is in classic Doctor Who. And poor Adric is trapped aboard a freighter that nobody can save him. They can't use the TARDIS to save him. The Cybermen, he's not going to become a Cyberman, but they have destroyed any means by which he can save the ship that he's on, and it's going to crash. And it's the Cybermen's fault. Then let's just skip to the new, the reboot, and how does the 10th Doctor and Rose, how do they get separated? And Rose doesn't even get to live on Earth. She has to live in a parallel universe. Sure, she has her dad, and she has clone 10th Doctor, but still, it's the Cybermen attack that opens up this parallel door, this parallel universe. And bam, there goes Rose. Then we come to, I'm just going to run through this really quick. Then the whole time that Matt Smith was Doctor Who, they didn't do Cybermen. And it was because people were traumatized by what happened to Rose and her family. No one really wanted to see the Cybermen again. And so Steve Moffat came in, and he did a great job with everything else, especially the Weeping Angels. And then Clara and Matt Smith, it was during Amy's time, there were no Cybermen. During Clara had this boyfriend. He was the most wonderful boyfriend ever. His name was Danny Pink. I loved him so much. And you talk about crying, the Cybermen got him. And he actually had two episodes, a Christmas special and an episode where he was a Cyberman and Clara was trying to get him back. But once you've become a Cyberman, you can never become human again. And then comes Bill. Not only that, in a couple of the specials, the Five Doctors and Christmas specials, it's been the Cybermen. More than the Daleks, the Cybermen come and mess with the companions, which is kind of crappy for us humans.
Say the least.
I don't know. It's very scary to think that this, we've already talked about how scary they are and what they do to us and everything, but just think, out of the whole Doctor Who canon, it's the Cybermen who come and take humans and destroy the companions' relationships. And that's pretty scary, because when you're watching Doctor Who, you're like, man, I wish he'd come and I could be a companion. Wouldn't that be great to go flying everywhere, back in time, forward in time, blah, 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 blah. And then think about how the Cybermen are always after the companion. I don't know. And it happened with Jodie Whittaker, too, but I'm not really familiar with the run of Cybermen on Jodie Whittaker during her time. And so,
no, neither am I, to be honest.
I'm 0% familiar with Jodie Whittaker at all. I just know that she is the doctor that came after I ran up all my free episodes on Amazon. So,
yeah,
I don't know about that.
So anyway, that's the Cybermen. They've definitely changed their look. Whereas the Daleks are subtle in the way they have changed over the decades, but the Cybermen have definitely changed. But you know what was cool and scary also is that the whole Cybermen, see. in the canon of Cybermen and Doctor Who, there are two different origin stories. And through the 12th Doctor and the loss of Bill and this big, giant, generational ship that is locked in the event horizon of a giant black hole, it's a really well thought out couple of episodes where Bill becomes a Cyberman. And what happens is that Bill becomes one of the first, not these all shiny silver, you know, high-tech Cybermen. Bill is actually transformed into one of the first Cybermen, because as you get on the elevator of this generational ship, depending on if you go up or down, you know, closer to the black hole or farther away from the black hole, time is different, right? We all know that, relativity and everything. And so Bill on this elevator goes all the way back to the back of the ship, which is going back decades in time to the person who created the Cybermen. And it's a scary mother effing episode. King Guns, when Danny Pink was also taken. Oh my gosh, I can hear the violin right now.
Okay. give you nightmares forever. Okay.
Right.
Maybe we should move on. I don't know.
We should move on. We should move along. Yeah.
All right. So you brought up the Cybermen. I'm going to bring up someone that I really, really want to talk about. And this was one episode that really got me hard. And that would be the Dream Master. And there's a number of reasons for this. If anyone doesn't remember the episode, it's basically Toby Jones plays the Dream Master, and he has them in two separate dreams, and they have to pick out which one is real. And it starts off with Amy being pregnant, and it gets really interesting. And if anyone doesn't realize who Toby Jones is, you have seen him all over the place. He's a man of diminutive stature, but my God, he can play evil like crazy. And there's a revelation with the Dream Master, which I'm holding on to at this point, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes. But what's your thoughts, Vicki, on the Dream Master?
Well, let's see. He's scary. It's definitely an introduction to this huge reveal for later on and more episodes. But you're right about one thing. Well, okay, you know what? When you first meet him in this episode, Toby Jones is just like Toby Jones is in almost anything that he plays evil. Because of his stature, because of the way he looks, he's got the blonde hair, he's got the blue eyes. He plays on that to disarm you. He makes you feel like, I'm not really a bad guy, and you could trust me. And that's what makes him the scariest in this episode, and makes him scary as a dream person. Because right now, you know, mm-hmm. when you're dreaming, you don't know anyway. There's big question marks floating around in your dream. Perfectly cast for this villain.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember the episode, Rachel? Do you know who we're talking about in the episode we're talking about? Oh, did Rachel get – no, Rachel's there. Hello, Rach.
Oh.
Well, we'll keep going.
Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. There's
okay. I think I remember that one. That one's not as much as I –
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's okay. The Dream Master is scary in that Toby Jones does a great job in being the master, the dream master or dream lord, whatever they want to call him. But it also plays upon that whole thing of when you are asleep and you're having one of those dreams that is a borderline nightmare. This could be a nightmare. Maybe it's not a nightmare. I'm sure scared. It's all dark and stormy. And so it plays upon those fears. Because when you wake up from a dream like that, when you wake up from a nightmare, you know you've had a nightmare. But when you wake up from that weird dream, was that a nightmare? That's even worse,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, and I've noticed a lot in the Doctor Who over the decades, I guess, one of the prevalent themes you see with a lot of the bad guys is they do fuck with you in a sort of dream state or put you into a dream state.
Yeah.
And so that's I think another thing that is, you know, some of our deeper fears is, you know, being in a state like that where you are so vulnerable because, you know, you're sleeping and you can't necessarily control what's going on in your dreams because not everybody has the capacity to lucid dream. So yeah, it gets pretty terrifying when you think about that.
And one of the other things, and there is a spoiler involved here, if you've never seen this episode, switch off now, please.
Or don't switch off. Just be clever in what you're going to say, Carl.
Well, you're asking me to be clever?
I know,
are
I laughed.
Sure?
Didn't you hear me chuckle?
How shall I say this without being spoilery? Let's just say that the Dream Lord has a connection to the Doctor. And what is he? Shall I spell it out or not, Dick?
No, I think that you can just say something along the lines of, obviously he's the embodiment of evil.
Nope. And he has a connection to the Doctor.
I think I think that we're trying to get our audience out there to watch these shows and not spoil it for them.
Yeah. But when that revelation happens, it blew me away. That scared me even more than the episode. And that to me is the beauty of the writing of that episode and the casting. Again, we could go on and on about Toby Jones.
But
I mean,
didn't he, the Dream Master, Dream Lord, they call him actually the Dream Lord. Didn't he show up for a Sylvester McCoy episode?
Yes, he did, actually. Yes, he did. Yep, he did. He wasn't playing the Dream Lord, though. That's the only Dream Lord that I know of. But Toby Jones has done a couple episodes.
No, I wasn't talking about Toby Jones, the actor. I was talking about Dream Lord, the villain.
Let me see. Hold on. I don't think so.
Yes, he did.
Well, I'm not perfect about this. Okay.
Okay, sir.
Okay. By the way, it's all because of psychic pollen, by the way.
And so.
Nope. Only one episode. Only one episode. That's it. He did not appear to any other episode. I didn't think so.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, moving along, Rachel, do you have another monster or alien that we didn't talk about last time that you wanted to bring up?
Let me look at this one. I'm trying to remember exactly what he's called. The child, the lost child.
Are you talking about the one? The one in the gas doctor. Yeah.
Hold on. Here we go. Let me see. Was this what I was looking at? Maybe. But yeah, I remember that episode being like one of the creepiest things I've ever seen in my life, where the, you know, it's got all the gas mask people, yeah, and all the weird zombies and the kid walking around all creepy. Are you my mommy?
Ah. Oh, yeah.
You know, oh, God.
No, I'm not. Go away.
Yeah, it's like you just want to kick it, like, get away. No. Yeah, that one was one that really, really freaked me out, was just the creepy kid.
And the way that the human is morphed into one of those mass creatures,
and
comes out their mouth, oh, it's just horrible. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
I don't want to be turned into anything, but good grief, look at that.
Yeah. Like, holy shit. And that's one of those ones, like, sometimes we forget how scary the solo villains can be sometimes.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And that is certainly one of Eccleston's most best out episodes, and that's a two-parter, if I'm not mistaken. That's a great,
because
it's outstanding.
It leads into the Doctor Dances and then into the end. It's actually, it really runs as a three-parter.
Right.
If you're lucky enough to be able to watch the last three episodes of the Ninth Doctor all together, they all run together.
Mm-hmm.
That's called The Empty Child. That's what it's called. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
The Empty Child. Yeah. And yeah, no kidding, The Empty Child. However, in the end, there is a happy ending for a couple of them. And then, of course, we are introduced to your favorite companion side character, Captain Jack Harkin. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's why it's one of the scariest and best episodes. Like, I absolutely love it. There's so many. Like, and I haven't even seen everything. It's mind-boggling how they can come up with so many different just nightmares.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing about that three-parter. Yeah, one of the other things I want to mention at that three-parter is that Eccleston, who has been somewhat dour throughout his whole period, that's the one point where you really see him happy at the end. And he says, you know, when he celebrates and he says, "Rose, no, nobody died. Nobody died." And that's wonderful. Yeah.
That's right before everyone dies. It's a really, really good episode because we see him smiling. We see him coming out of his, like, doctor depression a little bit.
Yep.
We needed that before the last.
Before
the regeneration comes up. And so, okay, Carl, I know that you want to talk about a villain specifically.
Well, I'm not saying this is the scariest villain of all time. And I'm not even sure if she's scary, but I love her. And this was one I didn't mention last time. And, of course, part of the reason is Sylvester McCoy's first episode. And that's Durrani. And she's just manipulative, and she's just evil, and it's wonderful. And there's a lot of parallels to the way that the actress plays it in terms of that, like, true evil that the master can have. And we'll get into the master here shortly. But I just love her. And I love the whole thing about kidnapping all the geniuses from Earth and from different generations. And she's trying to solve a problem. And of course, the doctor, of course, steps on her plans and so on and so forth. And it's just well done. And I just think the whole idea of having a problem and kidnapping all of the geniuses to help you solve the problem, I think is a great idea. I wish I could do that. Seriously. So I just wanted at least a little mention of the Ronnie, because I know there's a couple others we really need to focus on that you have. So I just wanted to make a quick mention of the Ronnie.
Okay.
You have any thoughts on her before we move on, Vic?
Oh, I thought that she would be a good reoccurring character,
yes.
But she never has been. And so... So, no, she's good when she pops up, and she's you can't really tell. I just watched those episodes last month or so, and at first you can't really tell. Is she a bad guy? Is she a good guy? Who's she working for? Is she working for herself? I mean, she does it really well. The character is three-dimensional, not a cardboard cutout of a villain. And so,
No. Yeah,
she's very interesting, very interesting.
And she comes in right at the time that McCoy has regenerated, and McCoy's still trying to figure out what the fuck's going on. So he's not
right at
the top of his game. So she controls him in a lot of ways. And it's a good dynamic.
Oh, yeah. I really love what you had to say, because she's... She really, really, really does her best to not kill the doctor, but manipulate the doctor onto her side, and maybe even wanting the doctor to become her own companion. I mean, there's
exactly.
Like elements of that there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
it's
so
like
it's
equals. They're almost equals, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what side they're on. And both
almost,
of them
yeah.
have that, yeah, almost, not quite, but almost. So there you go. Now, Vicki, I know you got a couple we got to go over, so go for it.
Okay, the Autons.
Oh, thank God.
The Autons, I don't think we really got into them too much. And and so the Autons, there's on the wiki site, it's so funny because their first appearance, their first appearance was in 1970, and you don't have to even know what they are, who they are, what show they're on. Because if you see the picture of them, you're just like, oh, those are 1970s type mannequins. They just
yep.
look like 1970s mannequins. They're so funny. They're scary, but they're funny. So go
okay.
ahead, guys. Talk
see,
about them.
That yes. I was reminded of that today because, like I said, I was doing research earlier on bad guys, and Carl suggested I watched a few minutes of The Master from the earlier episodes, actually his first episode which he was in. It was season 8, episode 1, Terror of the Autons, part 1. And I remembered all of a sudden, I forgot that they were called the Autons, and I remembered when they were talking about the plastic and stuff, and I was sitting here with Jeremy, and I was like, oh my God, babe, you have no idea, because he's not a Whovian at all. God bless him. I still married him anyway. But I was explaining it to him. I was like, okay, so like these weird they're like the nesting consciousness or whatever. They're attracted to plastic molecules. And so when they come to Earth, they inhabit all of the fucking mannequins in all of the shops and start like going around and murdering people. And as I start like going on to more details, like he's getting eyes wider and wider and backing further into his chair. And like, I was like, oh yeah, wow. I forgot. You're about to go to bed. I hope you don't have nightmares. Sorry. Cause you know, just imagining an entire city full of creepy mannequins, just like armies of creepy mannequins coming after you, all stiff and weird. I mean, and not a damn one of them was Kim Cattrall. Okay, I'm sorry, but that's just, it's too frightening.
Right. Right.
And yeah, I mean, ultimately they were really easy to defeat when it got down to it. But that was also the first episode that, or not the first episode, but the first, like, you know, arc of story where in the new season, the first thing that Rose deals with, and I think it may be the first episode, is the nesting consciousness.
It is, like, the first episode.
Walking. Yeah, well, and I mean, yeah. It goes through a couple of episodes with it, but yeah, like, it was so fucking freaky, dude, all those mannequins, and I used to work in retail and have to go into creepy storerooms with all these weird half-naked mannequins, and blah. That's a distinctly terrifying thing to see behind you, is a roughly humanoid shape that's just right there and super quiet.
Right.
Well,
I
one thing I have to say about the Autons is that, you know, when they make you scared for Rose's mother and what happens to her, they're scary.
Oh, yeah. That is true.
Yes.
Although,
yes.
can we all agree here? Rose's mom was a fucking idiot.
Right.
Yeah, but she was a likable fucking idiot, okay? She was an idiot.
Yeah, there were times when she was likable. Times.
Yeah, the times. Thank you, Vicky. Like, because the other times, I'm literally wanting to smack her head into a concrete wall to see if we can knock some sense into it. Like, maybe she and Rose's boyfriend, what's his fucking name, maybe they can get together and, you know, between the one brain cell that they each have, they can form a synapse.
I don't know. I know. It's thank goodness they redeemed Mickey. Okay, when he's brought back during the 10th Doctor, and redeemed him because he was an idiot, and they made an Auton in from Mickey. I don't even know how he wasn't dead, but he wasn't dead. But there was a Mickey
Auton. And he spent, what, like almost 2,000 years protecting whatever the fuck that was.
Oh, no, that's Rory. That's Rory.
No, that was Rory.
Oh, God, I love Rory. I love that act. And I watch everything that he's in. Arthur Darvill.
He's such a goofy fuck. You just love him.
I know. He is. It's just like, how could you not love that guy? You know, Amy, quit fawning over the doctor. You've got Rory here. He will love you to the very end. And no shit. He spent, what, 1,000 years? 2,000 years?
2,000 years.
Auton waiting.
2,000 years.
Waiting.
Yeah.
And guarding the doctor.
I mean, seriously. But yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. They did redeem Mickey, and thank God for that, because in the first episode, like, for a while, he was my least favorite character of all. I mean, come on. They have him eaten up by a trash bin. It's goofy. It's stupid. And it was like, I don't need that kind of comic relief in my shows. So we're going to have to see where the rest of this goes. And thank God it's Doctor Who. And of course, they redeemed themselves 100,000 times over. But I'm glad to see that he got a better arc later.
Yes. Yes, yes, absolutely. And it was with the Cybermen. The Cybermen started his better arc.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But
they're involved in like everything. Like when I was doing research through, it was like, wait, I forgot that the Cybermen were involved in that and that and that and that.
There are so many villains who go to the Cybermen and say, hey, why don't you help me take over Earth? And I will be the supreme Earth being, and you can have all the humans you want. Time and again, this happens. This is a storyline in Doctor Who, classic and reboot. The Cybermen are like, yeah, man, we just need human bodies. Let's do it. And then in the end, we'll take you too, you stupid human.
Well, right, and it's like people never learn. That's the funniest thing. We see that time and time again. That is the moral of Doctor Who. Nobody ever fucking learns. Nobody.
Right.
I mean, you've got all these guys that keep coming back time and time again, and it's like, you know, I just want to, of course we wouldn't have a series that way, but I just want to be like, the Doctor has literally been to the very end of time. And, like, you motherfuckers know he's capable of doing that because you know who you're messing with. It's the Doctor. He's literally been to the end of time, meaning he makes it there to the end of time. So whatever you're doing right now, probably not going to fucking work. Just go on your merry way, forget what you're doing, and just realize that you've preemptively been defeated by awesomeness.
And, you know, here's the thing about the Autons as villains. They're not like the number one villain or anything, but they never really try to mess with the Doctor. They're always being used as kind of like the Cybermen. Like somebody else is using the Autons to do their bidding, to you know, take over to like an army. I bought the Autons to come in and be my army, you know, like Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah, dude, they're the brute squad for hire.
Yeah, there you go.
But I mean, as long as you can find like plastic molecules for them to be all up in, they're like, yes,
well,
I am loving this.
I don't. I think that the planet Earth is the perfect place for Autons because we have so much plastic. I mean, the oceans are plastic, right? Every place is plastic. We poisoned our entire world with plastic. We have plastic floating in our bloodstream. So, yeah, Autons ought to live here. They would love it.
Yeah.
This would be like vacation time.
Well, I mean,
M. Night Shyamalan should have had the Autons invade Earth and signs instead of the water aliens who are afraid of water. I'm just saying.
No, they were, it was the dust motes or whatever. Oh, yeah, the water. God, the dust motes and the water. God, that makes me.
Right.
Sorry.
The shadows in the library were the dust motes and the water of Mars. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. That was really scary.
So one that other I think we should mention before we get into the Master, because you mentioned it, Vic, is the great intelligence.
Right. Well, I want to talk about, I wanted to talk about Omega also, so we'll do both.
Okay, do both.
Okay.
Cool. So pick one
Omega,
and start.
Okay, Omega, well, because Omega only happened and Omega is a character that I wish that they would bring back into the updated series, because I really liked his arc, and he's in the Five Doctors. Well, his first appearance was the Three Doctors, and I love it so much. I bought the Three Doctors. I have it on DVD or DVDs. He's an engineer and a super smart entity, more like a Time Lord than he's an intergalactic engineer and co-founder of Time Lords. Okay, he helped create Gallifrey and the Time Lords way back at the beginning of the universe or whatever. And he was so powerful, and he could manipulate time and space and matter that the Time Lords became afraid of him, and they imprisoned him. And when they imprisoned him, you know, just like that, the one we've never talked about also, the impossible planet, which is right next to a black hole also, where the devil is at, okay? They've been imprisoned, and they want out of prison, and they'll do anything to get out of prison. And so Omega is like that. And this is the first time that doctors from different generations came together to fight this mega, mega smart, mega Time Lord smart type villain. And so he's worth watching. He's worth hunting down in classic Doctor Who and watching all, I think there are 5 or 6 episodes, because you have William Hartnell was actually very ill at the time. So he is on by video, by screen. But you have Troughton and Pertwee in the same TARDIS trying to one-up each other. And their enemy is also somebody who can one-up them. It's fabulous. And that's what I love about Doctor Who villains, is sometimes they're as smart as or smarter than the doctors. Just wanted to mention Omega. And that's spelled just like Omega, you know. And
the Greek letter.
Yeah.
Let's all go to a sorority or fraternity. It's Omega.
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah. Okay, and then... and then the one that we should talk about that has not been talked about is, of course, the Great Intelligence. Do you want to start it out, anyone?
You go ahead, because I'm doing a little bit of research as we speak, and I'll get in here momentarily, okay?
Okay, now, let's see. I need to get... okay, the Great Intelligence actually starts way back in the Second Doctor. And the Great Intelligence is this like ethereal type being. It doesn't really have a shape, all right? It inhabits things. And they, it doesn't become them. It's still over here in it, but its intelligence is so great that it can be that human or that creature at the same time that it's itself out here in the ether world, okay, in the nether world. And so that makes it really, really, really scary. And it's described as being a creature from the void. And it first shows up in the Yeti episodes of the Second Doctor. And the Yetis, they're funny looking. They're just funny. And you think, oh, can't you guys get away from those Yetis? You know, they can't really. And one of my favorite companions, Jamie, is the companion. And this is all really fun. But then... it's like 4 or 5 episodes into these Yeti thing, all of a sudden it's revealed that it's not really the Yeti who is the villain here. It's this mysterious thing called the Great Intelligence, and he's fucking with the Doctor. All this time he's just fucking with the Doctor, and that's what the Great Intelligence does. When it comes up against the Doctor, it's like, oh, it's a Doctor, let's fuck with him. And so that is, that's the nature of the Great Intelligence. Now, I'm trying to get this.
Okay, so I'm gonna stop in here, jump in here and talk a little bit too.
Okay.
In the later seasons, okay, There was a 2012 Christmas special called The Snowman, where the intelligence itself is voiced by Sir Ian McKellen. Okay, let's just. And when it becomes human, guess who is the actor that portrays him? That's Richard E. Grant.
Yes,
otherwise known
as
How to Get Ahead. Oh, I love him. How to Get Ahead in Advertising with Nail and I. Love, and he's just so creepy. Just
he's
creepy.
So creepy.
And The Snowman is a really, really scary Christmas special. I put it top three scaries. Seriously,
yeah.
Those snowmen are nothing to be fucked with. Trust me.
No, they have like needle teeth. They're very scary. They have faces like snowmen, but they're like scary pumpkin faces that are snow with needle teeth.
Right.
Yes, they're scary. And Richard E. Grant, what can you say about him other than he is freaking fantastic in everything he ever does. One of the most, one of those actors who's always working, and yet the general public doesn't know who he is, which probably is good for him. I mean, he makes a fine living, but you go, oh yeah, that guy. Oh yeah, he's a scary guy. And so the great intelligence, also what's the, that episode, not episode, that Christmas special also introduces Clara, but not the Clara that becomes the companion, but Clara, the impossible girl. Clara, who is actually the first time we ever see her, or the second time. I get these two mixed up. Clara is also inside a Dalek. She is the impossible girl, and Matt Smith is always saying that. Why are you here? Why are you around me? Why you are the impossible girl? And she is in that Snowman Christmas special. And so if you like Clara as a companion, you're going to watch the Snowman, and you're going to like, isn't she a companion? But she has greater destiny in the whole Doctor Who storyline. So you have to just go with it. And really, if you like Clara, you need to go back to the episodes where she's a Dalek and in The Snowman, where she's a Victorian governess. And aren't the Solarians in that one, too?
Yes. Solarians are in that one.
Right. So,
actually, Great Intelligence shows up in two more episodes. The Bells of St. John, which is the one where the it's the Wi-Fi that downloads the Great Intelligence into humans. And then the name of the doctor, too, which is the Whisper Men.
The Bells, that's a Clara episode also.
Right.
And then the last one is Clara's already gone.
Right. No, but scary, scary, scary person. Intelligence, great intelligence, not a person. So we haven't heard from Rachel.
Entity.
What do you think, Rach? Entity,
I'm pretty inclined to agree there. I mean, you guys covered it on that one. Sorry. Now, I have one that this might be a bit of a controversial opinion here, but I think I have who may actually be the greatest villain of the Doctor Who series, and I can't believe I didn't think about this earlier.
Uh-oh.
The Time Lords.
Yes.
It's the Time Lords.
Yes. Yeah, Carl and I were talking about that because I was thinking we should do a whole hour on the Time Lords because, no kidding, Rachel, you're right. They are the biggest villain.
They are the quintessential villain.
Yes, but Pandorica is all about the other races saying it right out loud, Doctor Who, you're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You're the problem. The Time Lord is the problem. Not us, but you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I just thought about that. I was thinking back to some, you know, watching some Sarah Jane and stuff, and I remember, finding out the origin story where, you know, he actually stole his fucking TARDIS. And,
right.
You know, the Time Lords have been the ones that have been pursuing him through all of this. And when you find out, you know, it might be like after the story arc has already played out, but you'll see in another episode, it's like, oh, you know what? The Time Lords, they fucking facilitated all of this. I think I agree with you there. We're going to have an extreme breakdown of that because, man, I got so many, like, red strings and tacks going on over here. It's like my conspiracy board, you know.
Right. Because,
well,
like, there's specific Time Lord who is the one who we know the most, right? But we have Time Lords who were companions, and then we have Time Lords who were against the Doctor from the very beginning. There are Time Lords who are also sympathetic to what the Doctor is doing, and then there are Time Lords who are just completely evil. And then you have to remember that TARDISes are also sentient beings.
Yep.
So they all are part of this. When you start breaking it down, we have our, what did you call them? The one-off villains? The ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have them, and we know those guys really well because we have them in real life. We, you know, there's just this guy who's the villain, right? But
yeah.
When you start mixing the Daleks into this whole Time War thing, and you start breaking it all down, then you start seeing how the Time Lords are their own worst enemy and maybe everyone's worst enemy.
Well, yeah, because, like, they're almost more one-track than the Daleks and the Cybermen because their whole thing is to preserve their specific way of life, like, no matter, at all costs, that's it.
Right.
And, like, universe be damned, we got our own thing going here. And it's probably that selfishness and that one-track mind, you know, the inability to see the forest for the trees kind of thing that makes them even scarier because they weren't programmed to be that way. They're not fucking, you know, robots with thinking meat pieces inside of them. They're actual, you know, people.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Right.
One thing not to forget is, you know, with the power of the Doctor, they talk about forced regeneration. Well, Troughton, because of his meddling in everything in time and space, the Time Lords basically make him regenerate and then into Pertwee and then basically banish him to Earth, you know,
right,
as being in exile. So, you know, they did that too. Let's not forget that. You know, So ladies, I have a question for you. Should we sort of table this and put it into the next episode and just go focus on the Time Lords and the Master? Yes or no?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. I think that's an episode all on its own.
Because if we
then
get into
exactly
the Time Lords now, then either we're not going to do them justice or we're going to spend another hour.
Yeah.
I think we're going to do another show. In fact, I know we are. So that's going to be the next one in the series. And that will be next Thursday. Now, you're still in town.
No, it will not
be.
No, it
will
not
be next
Thursday. I am going to the Elton John concert, farewell concert in L.A. on Thursday night, and I will be driving to LA. No, I will drive Wednesday. I will be having mega fun with my cousin and his wife on Thursday. So, no.
Well, you do.
So.
Well, enjoy, because we'll do this in 2 weeks then, and it'll be fun. It'll
That's
be fun. You know what? Two weeks actually is Thanksgiving, so
yes.
Maybe what we need to do is maybe schedule it on the Wednesday before.
Well, we'll
or
talk.
We can talk about
Rachel
that.
About, yeah,
well,
yeah.
We'll
talk about that.
We'll get it scheduled. Okay.
Yeah. Whatever,
so
by,
the,
by December, it'll be, we'll have another episode, and it'll be on the Time Lords, and if and it will also be archived.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. So, ladies, I want to thank you both very, very much for joining us. Vicki, now, we're going to get into a little bit of housekeeping here, and actually Vicki, you have something that we'll get to that you're going to be announcing, so we'll
really?
Do that momentarily.
Oh.
yeah you do,
seriously, yeah, that's right.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll get there.
Okay.
give me a second here. So
okay,
tomorrow Adam Ferenz on the Catholic Ray Mission, we'll be doing a deep dive into Forbrydelsen, which is a Danish crime series, otherwise known as The Killing. On Saturday, it's been a kind of a tough week for me. So I talked to Doc, and we're doing a commentary watch on one of my favorite comedies. And this one's for me, guys. You know, I just need it this week. We're going to be doing a commentary watch on The President's Analyst, a 1967 film with James Coburn, Godfrey Cambridge, Severn Darden, Will Gear, William Daniels, and even Artie Johnson's in it too. So it's a lot of fun, very satirical take on politics and such. So, and of course, you know, it is November, and we just did have election, so it all works out together. And then on Sunday, we got Rock This Town Radio with TC, and he's doing a road trip, so he's featuring bands from Washington, D.C., Virginia, and Maryland. And on Monday, Josh Buckland, who's part of the group, I've been trying to get him on doing shows, and we'll be doing a show, commentary watch, and it's called Josh's Favorite Film Series, and he's going to be doing a commentary watch with me on Little Murders. So that brings us to Thursday the 21st, and Vicki, actually before that we'll go to the 18th, and that's Cathar Gray Mission. That's 2 weeks from a week from this coming Friday, and that's Atlanta, and they'll be doing a deep dive onto that. But the 21st is something that's very special, and I want to give this to Vicki because we just set this up today. So what's happening on the 21st, Miss Vicki?
Okay, for a very long time, I can't remember the date, 2016, 2015, I'm not sure, but on Stephen's network, Stephen asked me to have my own show, and he titled it Vicki Loves Sci-Fi, because I'm not really a horror fan, I'm a science fiction fan, and I'm not even a fan, because I got angry at Carl for saying that not too long ago.
Yes, I did.
I love science, and I love science fiction, and I know a lot about both, and I used to, on Stephen's network, combine them. I used to come in with, that's when we first sent New Horizons to Pluto. That was a long time ago, 2015, I think. And I have friends who are in the astronomy, science, astrophysicist type careers and genres and those kinds of things, writers and real scientists. And so I like to open my shows with real science that kind of strings into science fiction that I want to talk about, either films, TV shows, books, magazines, whatever, short stories. And so I don't have guests, not right now, and I don't really want to start out with having guests or anything, but I thought maybe a 30-minute, 20-minute, 30-minute, something that you could pull up on an archive and listen to what's happening in science and what's happening in science fiction this week. I can hook you up with TV shows that you might want to watch. Like this week, both Hulu and Netflix put one of my favorite science fiction films on for their audiences, and that's Oblivion, starring Tom Cruise and lots of other wonderful actors that I love too. And I just love that story. And one of my very favorite science fiction lines is actually spoken by Tom Cruise is in that movie. And I'm not a Tom Cruise fan, like, you know, ooh, I got to watch all his shows. I haven't even seen the new Maverick. But I like this movie. I like this story. And so that would be something that I would put into this show that I want to do. And so that's what it is. It's going to be sci-fi. Vicki loves sci-fi for about 30 minutes or so on usually a Monday, I think. Right, Carl?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It'll be on Mondays. And hopefully it'll be a weekly thing. And
yeah.
We're very, very glad to have you with us. Now, that being said, I do want to talk a little bit about Stephen. You know, Stephen, Vicki was all, you know, that was always connected to Stephen. And right now Stephen's having some health difficulties. And we certainly want to wish him well and our love and our regards to him and his family and his mom and everybody and his sisters. So definitely want to do that. And just an update, he is stabilized. He still has a lot to go through at this point, but you actually got a picture of him and text from him. So he is contacting everyone. I had about a 5-minute conversation with him today. And all I can say is that, you know, get better, and as soon as you're better and as soon as you're ready to go, we'll give you back, Vicki. No problem. Or you come on with us or whatever the case. Your family, you should be here with family anyway. We love you, and we wish you well, and we want you to be better, and we all love you with our whole heart, seriously. And I think that goes for everyone here. Correct?
That's right. Absolutely.
All right, so anything – oh, Vicki, if you think you're leaving here without talking about your film, you're crazy, so talk to me.
Okay, I'm going to go meet with my son right now. I'm going to have to leave as soon as we get off here. We are filming again this weekend. And things are really starting to come together. Hopefully filming will be done before Christmas, and then the new phase starts, and then we'll have a show on what's happening with our film Lake. It's called Lake. And I'm amazed. Our actresses are just shining like shooting stars. No, they're not. They're not shooting stars, because shooting stars only kind of, you know, show themselves and then fade away. These young ladies, these ladies are absolutely some of the best people I've ever worked with. And their dedication to getting it right and their dedication to being here is just incredible. And I can't wait until I can say, oh, yeah, you can see the movie this way. You know, I don't know how it's going to be distributed. We have two different companies interested in distributing once it's ready. So I don't know that, but you're going to love it because these actors have dedicated themselves and on a budget of zero. And so I'm really excited. Yes. I have the enthusiasm sure. again.
Well, when you're done shooting, we've been talking about this. We started a audio series of your going through and casting and so on and so forth. So when you're ready, we want to continue that here and give you as much support and PR as we can. So
right.
So please just keep us informed. All right, that being said, and we've got everything done with housekeeping, I think at this point we want to thank everyone for listening. And I think it's time to say good afternoon, good night. So shall we, ladies?
Good afternoon. Yeah.
Good even night.
It is time to go to lunch. So have a good lunch, everyone.
All right. Good night, everyone. Good evening. Good whatever. Okay, but it's time to leave. Okay, so bye.